And in weather today, it is 56 degrees under cloudy skies in Washington, D.C. Temperatures are forecast for the high 50s for the rest of the day and to rise into the 60s tomorrow. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Hey, welcome to the Labor Heritage Power Hour, a weekly radio show celebrating the cultural heritage of the American worker.
We're a proud founding member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network, laborradionetwork.org.
I'm Chris Garlock.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
So, Elise, I'm just back from Labor Notes, and most of the show is going to be from Labor Notes, and we're also going to preview the DC Labor Film Fest, which starts on May 1st. But you had to stay home in DC last weekend for a very good labor arts reason, and so I wanted to have you tell folks about that.
I had the honor and privilege of attending the Celebration of Life for Dennis Surrett, who most people know is from CWA. He was an education director and headed up the Minority Leadership Institute for many, many years. Dennis was also a visual artist, which most people don't know.
Didn't know that.
Yep. And then Ed Smith, CEO of Ulico, who passed and had a celebration on Sunday. And Ed Smith was just a great guy on so many levels. He was one of the early graduates of the National Labor College, George Meany Center. And he was also a big supporter of arts and the Labor Heritage Foundation.
There was one particular story. I'm sure you have a million Ed Smith stories. The last time I remember seeing Ed was at the opening night performance of Working.
Yes.
In front of the AFL-CIO.
Yes.
And Ed, he went backstage with the cast afterwards. And he was just like a kid in the candy shop.
Absolutely. Least.
He was just so excited about the show, about meeting the folks in the show. But there's a story that you've told me about. I think without Ed, that show never would have happened, right?
It would have been difficult.
Okay.
Well, it wouldn't have happened in the first place if he hadn't given us the funding to do it.
Okay.
I asked him to be on the fundraising committee. And he said, how much do you need? And I told him, he said, you got it. And that was it. There was no committee. He wasn't chairing anything. He gave us the money through Ulico. The AFL-CIO was gracious enough to allow us to perform Working outside the headquarters of the AFL-CIO in the front of the house. But we could not use the restrooms. This was during COVID.
That's right. That's right.
And we couldn't rent dressing rooms because you can rent trailer dressing rooms, but they have to have somewhere to park. And because we're on Black Lives Matter Plaza, right across from the White House, you couldn't park.
No way. Nope.
So we said, Ed, we need help. And he said, let me call my brother Terry O'Sullivan over at the Laborers Union, which is right across the street from the AFL-CIO. And that, it was taken care of. The next thing we know, we had open access. The actors could go there, get dressed, put on their makeup, come out, and be ready for the show. That's Ed Smith.
So do you have an insight into, you know, why Ed was such a fan of the labor arts? I'm just curious about how he arrived there. Do we know that?
I talked to his wife, Betty, at the celebration of his life. And she said that was just who he was. He loved music. He loved the arts. He loved theater. And he loved hearing us sing.
Great guy.
Yes. Ed Smith, presente.
In Crowd by the Ramsey Lewis Trio, one of Ed Smith's favorites. Here's the show. This year's DC Labor Film Fest launches on May Day, next Wednesday, May 1st. If you'd like a chance at a pair of free passes, email us at info@laborheritage.org. That's info@laborheritage.org. You'll find the complete DC Labor Film Fest schedule online on the Labor Heritage Foundation's website, laborheritage.org. In our first segment today, AFI Silver and Cultural Center Director Todd Hitchcock and Abby Algar, Director of AFI Programming, preview the opening night film. All right, so Todd, Abby, welcome to the Labor Heritage Power Hour. We're here to talk about the 2024 DC Labor Film Fest. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be back with you.
So we have a really interesting mix as usual. We've got some classics, we've got some new stuff, and we've got some stuff that's I think we can safely say is out on the cutting edge. Why don't we go ahead and start out with opening night on May 1st. Todd, you want to tell us about what we've got?
Sure. So on what has now become kind of our traditional opening night for the DC Labor Film Fest of May the 1st, happens to land on a Wednesday this year. We're going to open up this year's festival with a film called The Old Oak, which is written and directed by Ken Loach. And I'm hoping, trusting that for your listeners, that's a familiar name from many films over many years previously, including many that have screened as part of the festival. But this one is, it definitely counts as a labor film, but it comes at it through an interesting way. So it's a depressed Northern England town so far, so Ken Loach, I get it. But there's a flare-up within the community regarding some recently relocated Syrian refugees, a couple of families and the neighborhood, the changing neighborhood. Who are the faces in the neighborhood now? Do they socialize or not in the traditional modes of the older and aging long-term residents? And the Old Oak is the name of the local pub, which has seen better days. It's which everyone comments on, both the people who still go there and the people who don't go there. But for people who really believe in what a pub can be, the story centers there and kind of has a moment of turning a corner and becoming a little more hopeful that, you know, maybe this can still be a place where the community comes together and the new version of the community. I won't say anything more because there's still a lot of twists and turns beyond that. But turns out some of the community are open to the new neighbors, and but they're up against problems from within the community and those who are not. And there's a quick mention as they debate opening the back room of the pub that hadn't been open for long years. So for the first time in decades, it needs to have the sheets pulled off the tables and that whole thing. But it turns out there's this whole mini museum to the 70s and the miners' strikes. And it really is kind of like a small local museum in the back room of the pub that people haven't used in so long. It's a really terrific moment in the film, alongside the pub owner and sort of the community leader of the new Syrian residents, their relationship and negotiations and trying to bring the sides together. It's a really lovely film. And now apparently it is officially Ken Loach's final film because he's recently announced his retirement, which we've kind of been there before, but this seems like this is really the one.
For you.
All right, lad.
How come they're getting all that stuff?
I've lost everything. I've left a war zone.
She's taking your photo there.
You better delete that photo.
They're just kids, man. Let them get in the house and get settled, man.
I'm really sorry that happened.
Can't say I'm surprised. If you had the stuff that come out within the pub.
This has become a dumping ground, lads.
We've been in this village all our lives, and we're supposed to share it with that lot. We don't even know them.
Thank you for your kindness when we arrived. I really appreciate it. My name is Yara, by the way. What's yours?
Tommy Joe Ballantyne.
Do you mind me asking? Are you all right?
When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a photographer and travel the world.
If you've got a moment, you'll come back to the pub with me. I wanted to show you the photographs in here. A whole way of life, just gone forever.
When you eat together, you stick together.
My mother always said that.
Some of the locals are struggling too.
Everywhere's closed. Even the school's gone. We can't even look after our own.
Just one from back to worse, isn't it?
Imagine if all the families mix and start to eat together. If you eat together, you stick together.
God, what? God, what?
The village, the old oak.
We need this.
It's like a bloody refugee camp.
And watch your mouth, Paul.
It's not charity. This is solidarity. This is about we'll do something together.
It takes a strength to build something new. It takes strength to build something beautiful. Shukran. Do you know what shukran means? It means thank you.
Shukran.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 2013, the day of the deadliest workplace disaster in garment industry history. More than 1,100 workers lost their lives when a factory complex building collapsed in Bangladesh. More than 2,500 workers were injured. The day before the collapse, workers had noticed cracks in the building. A bank and shops on the lower floor did not open the next day, fearful the structure was unstable. The garment workers were ordered back to work under the threat of being fired. Rescue efforts continued for nearly 3 weeks. One woman was found alive after 17 days. She was a seamstress. Bangladesh's garment industry is the second largest in the world, ranking only behind China. Nearly half of the top brands in the United States are produced in Bangladesh. The workers there are amongst the lowest paid in the world. Legal restrictions make trade union organizing in the country very difficult. A later investigation found that the building was built without authorization on a pond and converted from commercial to industrial use. It was also discovered the owners had cut corners and used substandard materials in the constructing of the building. In addition, the owners added 3 more floors than were originally included in the building permit. In the aftermath of the disaster, more than 150 clothing companies signed a workers' safety accord. Most of these were European companies. This plan was backed by Bangladeshi unions. Some large U.S. chains, such as Walmart and Gap, refused to sign, saying that they had their own safety plans. It's important to note that the result of inspections under the Walmart-backed plan were not legally binding. After the 2013 disaster, it was estimated that it would take $3 billion to make the garment factories in the country safe. Today, Bangladesh has more than 4,000 garment factories, and many of them remain dangerous places to work. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, this is Michael Funke from the Radical Songbook on PirateButteRadio.com. I'm proud to be part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network with over 200 radio shows and podcasts across the country and around the world. Tune in, LaborRadioNetwork.org. Power to the workers and their union.
Next up, this year's Great Labor Arts Exchange took place at the Labor Notes Conference. More than 4,500 of the nation's most creative grassroots activists gathered in Chicago, riding a wave of excitement to rebuild a fighting labor movement. Labor Notes teamed up again with the Labor Heritage Foundation's Great Labor Arts Exchange to present dynamic musical performances as well as workshops on songwriting, poetry, protest, art, creative tactics, and even interactive theater. We'll be presenting audio from the Great Labor Arts Exchange over the next few weeks. And to get things rolling, here's an audio collage excerpted from Saturday night's concert.
Equal rights for you and me. If the first woman turned it upside down, all of us women can turn it around. 100 years of her story. Women marching for dignity. We've been held back long enough. As women were strong and tough, the unity, unified for the world to see. Organizing had enough, pushing back with strong and tough, arm in arm in unity. We've got the right, we are fighters, on fire. Justice will guide us. We are the champions. The world gonna hear us roar louder. Voting with power, speaking in one voice. The world gonna hear us roar with it. Looking for a new dawning day to come. Real change is here at last. Seize the moment, can't let it pass. Me for you and you for me. We'll march together till we are free. In solidarity, for all the world to see. Through our voice they'll hear our roar. Numbers too big to ignore. We've been held down for too long. We've got the right, we are. And all we have to do is even though I know
Cause we gotta fight. Yeah, we gotta fight. I love y'all, neighborhoods. Thank y'all. Love, love, love.
Here in a divey topless bar. They looked out for each other while the bosses looked away. After years of corporate pimping, it's time strippers had a say. They looked out for it. Worker power swept the nation till it reached that dressing room. The strippers talked to protest, sang the same old union tune. In that age-old labor relay, they said, pass us the baton. We'll command respect and dignity, and we'll do it in a thong. And we'll hustle for the union, we'll hustle come what may. Oh, we'll fight for worker freedom, and we'll dance along the way.
You're listening to the Labor Heritage Power Hour on WPFW 89.3 FM, Revolutionary Radio for Revolutionary Times. You just heard Billboard singer-songwriter Lynn Marie Smith, also known as the Motown Diva, artist and advocate Jordan Bridges, winner of the Stringbuster Ballad, who currently serves as the organizing director at the New Orleans Workers Center for Racial Justice, and Lilith, winner of the Joe Glazer Best Union Song. Back now to our audio postcard from last Saturday night's concert at the Great Labor Arts Exchange at the Labor Notes Conference in Chicago.
Well, it's troubled times in the land of the free. Everybody's yelling, can't agree on what is right and what is wrong. Who we are, who don't belong. What's a good price to sell your soul? What do we pitch down the memory hole? Who to hug and who to shun? Do kids' lives matter more than guns? It's confusing. Agitating. A recipe for complete consternation. Well, a little while back, some folks got mad. Big fool told them they'd been had, and they swallowed his lies till they had their fill, then took to charging up Capitol Hill. Womping on cops and jumping the fence. Let's get dancy! Hag Mike Pence. They broke into those hallowed halls and wiped their doo-doo on the walls. Raised a big stink. God-awful mess. A real study in citizenship. Well, the Oath Keeper's proud boys caused such grief that folks started calling the clown in chief, begging him, please call off the mob. He sat back laughing, that's not my job. So cops were beaten, a few of them died, all because that big fool lied and treated the law with total scorn. America gored on the shaman's horn. Ugly sight. Bloody riot. Some even called it legitimate political discourse. Now I thought that there'd be hell to pay, but it didn't seem to be working that way. Early outrage started to fade while the big lie bloomed like the Rose Parade. MAGA folks screaming voter fraud. Their logic, though, is kind of flawed. And judges threw out every claim and every audit showed the same. Facts are facts. Reality is reality. Despite the best efforts of cyber ninjas. Well, a bunch of folks have gone to jail, but the fool in his lie could yet prevail. He's cooking up another insurrection, intends to win the next election, regardless of what the voters say. We're fools if we let him have his way. It's up to us, our destiny. We can live in lies or democracy. That's the truth. Once you know it, that truth will keep you free.
Power to the working class.
I said,
power to the working class.
We will not let this warehouse pass.
Power to the working class.
Hello, everyone. What a beautiful night, right? Written by Raphael Castle. It's about 20 years old now, and when I think about it, we've come a long way, actually, with body image and loving ourselves and caring for ourselves. So take it with a grain of salt, but when I was 12, this song meant a lot to me. Well, poem meant a lot to me. Sometimes I feel like I'm sitting in the back of Barbie and Ken 101, a class we're all in, but never seem to learn from. Some general education requirement that convinces even the brightest of young women that sex is survival of the thinnest. And I am sick of this education. It doesn't serve our best interests. My teacher has no face. She's every Revlon model women have ever chased. Her lectures can be seen on the backs of magazines, ad campaigns, and marketing campaigns. Just turn on your TV. This just in, a skewed perspective for today's youth. Y'all ladies ain't thin enough, fellas ain't trim enough, wanna be sexy? Y'all don't go to the gym enough. Cut to commercial. Come on, just tune into their maintenance team. Tell you you're ugly, then tell you how to fix it with Maybelline. Please, they're just boating Barbie to fit new trends. Next, they'll have club hopping Barbie with thongs as accessories. Video hoe Barbie, abusive boyfriend sold separately. Underage Barbie, Kobe Bryant's included. 9/11 victim Barbie. And Ken is proud to get recruited. The problem is, all of this teaching is women's decay. And my girls are up front and they're starting to get an A. This is where I start to get really pissed off, okay? When the f- did it become all about tucking in the gut, I gotta get bigger breasts? I wanna fit a little better in that dress. So let me get a little skinny, gotta fit into an itty bitty size slimmer so I'm living up the chest. Teacher, I wanna give my own presentation because I have a problem with your class, and a matter of a fact, I have a whole problem with your whole administration. You are the reason that my girl won't sit in front of me in a restaurant. The reason why she thinks she's overweight in over 10 spots. Less gut, less pudge, less looks, less real. More looks, more love, more Barbie appeal. Barbie and Ken. Yeah. They're the reason why 15-year-old girls' arms are slit. The reason why 12-year-olds think that skinny is a compliment. It's too late. I cannot write my way through this bathroom door. So I will raise my hand in class because I can't take it anymore. Teacher, your lectures are all backwards. You've got mothers and daughters forgetting what matters. Yes. Because above ass, lips, legs, and Uggs, the most beautiful women are the ones who don't give a f-. So screw you, your teachings, your lessons, your plans. You skewed, sick, distinct relative of the man. Your plan for my baby, I reject. I am walking out of your class and I will gladly take my F.
Yeah. For decades, we've been gaining ground through solidarity. In 2022, our worker movement picked up speed. Locked down by Omicron, we still reached out to build worker power. We finally forced our Premier Ford to bring the minimum wage to $15 an hour. $20 will soon be ours. The demand for 10 paid sick days has our whole country inspired. BC15 employer paid sick days, that solidarity on fire. But the stubborn Ford government pretends to work for workers while refusing to protect us, renewing a measly 3 temporary paid sick day scheme. Ford clearly disrespects us. How ironic, his worker income protection benefit handed over millions to corporations, as if big business needs more than tax cuts, false tax claims, and tax evasion. Workers deserve a 5-finger discount on our freedom. Take it or leave it, the power is there, only way is to seize it. They won't just hand it to us, too busy stealing, from wage theft to pay freezes. It gets hard to believe it, but we were born winners. Build our power and we'll see it. Bad bosses forced to follow the law and pay up. But first we gotta raise up, not just our fists, but also our minds. Deep conversations with our neighbors, convince them that it's worth the fight. Yeah. We're not just changing workplaces, we are changing the times, changing the very air, because we are the wind, we are the water, we are all the currents that erode obstacles set up to make us falter. We are electricity, shocking this corrupt system till it flatlines. And our labor history timelines shall form the branches of worker futures, higher standards, and new norms. We are multiple forces of nature combining into one powerful storm. Amazing migrants leading the way to victory. So many decades of fighting against what looks so much like systemic slavery. Let's stoke the fire that can win us all permanent residency, equal rights for 1.7 million essential human beings. Imagine every worker could stand up to bad bosses dead set on exploitation without fear of threats of indefinite detention and deportation. What a beautiful transformation if we keep bringing together every worker and community member who stands to gain when our conditions of work get better. Like we did when we showed solidarity for education workers, parents, students, teachers, and other workers painted our province purple. Not even Bill 28 could stop them. Go ahead and call our strikes illegal. We'll call for a general strike and you'll see the power of the people. Real democracy is only seen when we take it to the streets. The only limit is our imagination, time to crystallize our dreams. The only way to build strong movements is to lovingly seed them. Let's do the grassroots groundwork for justice and freedom.
This is the Labor Heritage Power Hour on WPFW 89.3 FM, revolutionary radio for revolutionary times. We're sharing an audio postcard from last Saturday night's concert at the Great Labor Arts Exchange at the Labor Notes Conference in Chicago. It features winners of the Arts Exchange contest and other selected performers. You just heard Detroit poet and singer-songwriter Steve Jones, followed by Gemini, an environmental organizer and part of the Climate Alliance of the South Sound. Kendra Janot, a sexual assault nurse examiner and union steward with the Minnesota Nursing Association, and Shauna Dixon, winner of the Bread and Roses Best Labor Social Justice Poem. Shauna is an organizer at the Workers' Action Center based in Toronto and the Justice for Workers campaign in Ontario, Canada. Here's Ben Frazier, winner of the Talkin' Union hip-hop piece. Ben raps as Kennock. Here he is. With no justice, no Jeeps.
All right, let's go.
Hee-haw, hee-haw. One G, two G, three G, four. No justice,
no Jeeps.
No more feast until all of us eat. No justice.
No Jeeps.
No more forced 12 hours because we all gotta sleep. No justice.
No Jeeps.
You can keep the small coins that you've got in your hand. No justice.
No
dodge. Because all my siblings coming, I can hear them from the lodge. Ford ain't about to do lines. You can't move Go ahead and meet me at the Rouge Bridge. Finished asking nicely. We could get it feisty. 5% of cost, but you paint us like we're shiesty. Crocodile tears for the American consumer. We're not the reason prices up, you silly baby boomers. You think that if they paid us none, they charge you less. They only want your money and they'll get what they can get. So arms locked, crossed up, B-boy discipline. Sit down, stand up, Detroit, Michigan. Fist raised, sign high, walk tight, this again. Low pay, we strike, no play, then we win. Justice, no cheese. No more feast until all of us eat. No justice, no cheese. No more forced 12 hours because we all gotta sleep. No justice, no rams. You can keep the small coins that you got in your hand. No justice, no God. Cause all my siblings coming, I can hear them on the lodge. If you ready, then we ready. If you're not, that's cool. We gon' be outside like the last day of school. We gon' be outside like we dancing in the rain. If you try to cross the line, then we gonna go insane. Around, find out days in this place. Motor City Rays still stay in this place. Working class folks need a raise in this place. And we want it for you too, so don't hate in this place. Around, find out days in this place. Motor City Rays still stay in this place. Working class folks need a raise in this place. And we want it for you too, so don't hate in this place. Said he.
Oh.
He.
Oh.
1G, 2G, 3G, 4.
With the Great Labor Arts Exchange, the Labor Heritage Foundation, joining forces with Labor Notes for the second time. This was an extraordinary gathering 2 years ago. It's even better now. Really, just so many people working so hard to make this an amazing experience. And it is our honor to be here, and it's my honor to close this out tonight. After I'm done with this song, we are gonna do a version of Solidarity Forever that's become a tradition with the Great Labor Arts Exchange. It's called Rockin' Solidarity. And any members of the community who know this song, please come up here and we'll sing it together. But this is a song I wrote for school workers in Ashtabula County, Ohio, many years ago. And one of the workers came up to me. There was a victory celebration. These were 98 workers that did not know how to run a strike. Their local OPSE, Ohio Association of Public School Employees, had not had a strike in over 40 years. And they called unions around the state of Ohio and said, you gotta teach us how to do this. And amazingly enough, they came in and taught them how to strike. They taught them how to do it successfully. That's solidarity in action. I'm talking about it. And they were out for over 3 months, and donations came in and paid the bills of those 98 families while they took a stand for all the rest of us. So the chorus is a direct quote from one of the workers, one of the lunchroom workers there. And I asked her to tell me about the strike, and she said, well, you know, they wouldn't talk to us. The school board wouldn't talk to us. And I just went up to one of them and I said, look, we're never gonna give up, we're never gonna give in, and we're never gonna go away, so you might as well talk to us. And I thought, okay. And then she went on to say, we're doing this for our daughters and our sons. And I know that that language is not as inclusive as some people would like, but as a journalist who uses music and songwriting to document other people's stories, I choose to use the words that were said to me by that rank and file worker in her struggle. Having cable malfunction, pardon me just a moment, we'll get this right.
Hot, and we will not let you play us for the fool.
ask for better health care or an increase in our wage. Tell us that the township can't afford to pay the bill, but you found $500,000 from within those very coffers to try and break the union's back and break our will. And we will never give up, we will never give in, and we'll never ever go away. We will build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. Education and the future of our town and the children that we serve from day to day. Whenever there's a need, we always go the extra mile. God knows we do it for the love, not for the pay. But we have worked as hard as any for every inch of ground that we've gained in the struggle for our rights. And we will not stand by idly as you try to tear us down. If we have to, we will organize a strike. We'll never give up, and we will never give up,
never give in.
We will never give in, and we'll never ever go away.
Build a brand new future.
We will build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. Well, we didn't have a penny in the strike fund, sad but true. That made us all a little bit afraid. But the call went out to every other union in the state, and somehow all the workers' bills were paid. You see, this isn't just our struggle, and it isn't just our jobs, and it isn't just the schools within our town. When we dare to raise our voice, in solidarity we stand. Every other worker, all the world around, will never give up. And we will never give up. We will never give in. And we'll never, ever go away. We will build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. Fairgrounds to show them my resolve, drum up some support for our campaign. 1,000 people hit the street, that's more than half our town. After that, you know, things couldn't be the same. Well, whoever would have guessed it when this whole thing began, we'd have the strength to hold out for so long. But 3 months have now gone by, and the school board just gave in on their demands. Now we can sing our victory song. We'll never give up. And we will never give up. We will never give in. And we'll never, ever go away. We will build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. Never give up, and we will never give up. We will never give in, and we'll never ever go away. We will build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. We will.
we'll build a brand new future for our daughters and our sons. We will work till all workers rise as one. It is we who have plowed the prairie. Dug the mine and built the workshop. And was my railroad lane.
That was Joe Jenks, Dave Welsh, and all the great Labor Arts Exchange performers closing out the show with Rockin' Solidarity. A 25 veteran of the international folk scene, Joe Jenks is a proud member of the American Federation of Musicians Local 1000. You're listening to the Labor Heritage Power Hour on WPFW 89.3 FM, Revolutionary Radio for Revolutionary Times.
Hello, powerful people. This is Seth Harris from the Power at Work blog. We're proud to be a part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. It has more than 200 labor radio shows and podcasts from across the country and around the world. The Labor Radio Podcast Network, where working people speak. Find us at laborradionetwork.org. That's all one word, laborradionetwork.org. Thanks.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day a truce came in the Stockton Cannery Workers' Strike. It was a pivotal moment that embodied the conflicts of the 1930s labor movement. The AFL initially wrote agricultural workers off as unorganizable. They soon raced to unionize California canneries ahead of the International Longshoremen's Association's march inland to organize warehouse workers. By early April, Agricultural Workers Union 202-221, representing five canneries, demanded higher pay, better working conditions, and a closed shop. The canners and growers refused on the basis that they had just granted a 25% raise to the workers. They then attempted to spike union support among workers, whether AFL or CIO, by arguing, quote, one was dominated by communists, the other by racketeers, so take your choice. Soon, they formed a Citizens Labor Investigating Committee to thwart the impending strike. Picket lines went up in the early hours of April 15th. Growers and canners appealed to law enforcement to do something and appealed to the public to enlist in the forcible reopening of the canneries. Dubbed the Pick Handle Army, anti-union forces joined the sheriff's department in confronting the strikers on the 23rd. There, they battled with picketers for over 3 hours in what is referred to as the Spinach Riot. Picketers confronted scabs and spinach delivery drivers and were beaten, gassed, and shot by sheriff's forces, resulting in one death and 58 injuries of strikers. Considered one of the worst labor battles in California's history, the State Federation moved to strip the union of its charter once the truce was called. They reorganized workers as Cannery Workers Union 20676 and won sole recognition. But agricultural workers would remain unorganized for years to come.
Well, that is going to do it for this week's edition of the Labor Heritage Power Hour. Hey, if you've got suggestions for guests or topics for future shows, we'd love to hear about it. Drop us a note, info@laborheritage.org. The Labor Heritage Power Hour is a proud founding member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network, laborradionetwork.org. Today's show is produced by me, Chris Garlock. Ashley C. and Shannon Drake recorded the Great Labor Arts Exchange performances, and Mike Nasella and Kalia Chapman are our engineers here on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. We're going out with another Ed Smith favorite, also by the Ramsey Lewis Trio, Hang On Sloopy. Thanks so much for listening to the Labor Heritage Power Hour, the art and soul of the American labor movement.
Grab hold.
From WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. New York's highest court today overturned Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction, reversing a landmark ruling of the Me Too era. In a 4-3 decision, the New York Court of Appeals found that the trial judge who presided over the film producer's case made a crucial mistake, allowing prosecutors to call as witnesses a series of women who said Weinstein had assaulted them, but whose accusations were not part of the charges against him. The court's majority called this an abuse of judicial discretion. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office signaled its intention to retry Weinstein, and his accusers could again be forced to retell their stories on the witness stand. Meanwhile, Weinstein will remain imprisoned because he was convicted in Los Angeles in 2022 of another rape. The Supreme Court heard arguments today from lawyers for former President Trump and Special Counsel Jack Smith's office over Trump's claim of presidential immunity in the election interference case against him. The case, Trump v. United States, asked the justices to decide whether former presidents can be prosecuted for crimes they committed while in office. In this case, that refers to Donald Trump's role in plotting to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Oral arguments began with Trump's attorney, John Sauer, claiming that any official act that an executive does as president would be protected by presidential immunity. He was followed by Michael Dreeben, representing Special Counsel Jack Smith, who argued against presidential immunity as defined by the defense. In early questioning, the court signaled skepticism over absolute immunity. The judges, both liberal and conservative, focused much of their early questioning around whether a president can face criminal prosecution for private actions taken while in office, as well as how to draw the distinction between private and official acts. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, a Trump nominee herself, zeroed in on what type of behavior Trump's lawyers maintained were private acts or official acts. Later, Justice Samuel Alito questioned Michael Dreeben, representing the government, whether the president is in a different position than most individuals, having to make a variety of critical, high-pressure decisions. The court, which has a 6-3 conservative majority, including three justices appointed by Trump, has come under criticism for the delay in considering the former president's appeal in the case as the November presidential election approaches. And in related news, a state grand jury in Arizona indicted former President Donald Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, lawyer Rudy Giuliani, and 16 others for their efforts to use so-called fake electors to prevent the lawful transfer of power in 2020. The indictment includes 9 criminal counts, including felony fraud, forgery, and conspiracy for submitting documentation falsely claiming Trump won the state's popular vote. The former president himself is not charged, but is listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. The charges follow a year-long